Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslovsky. Hey, has anyone seen my intro music? Have you seen it over there? Oh, there it is. That's just a little organizing joking to get you in the mood. This is episode number 37. Season's greetings to you for any and all seasons, of course. My friend, I do not need Thanksgiving to be near, to be thankful that you are listening to another episode of this show. Maybe you can guess what I have in store for you based on my silly little intro, which, by the way, seem to be getting stranger over time. Is it just me? Probably not, huh? I am taking requests for future intros, though, just so you know. And if you have a good one in mind, you can leave a voicemail on valueofsimple.com or send an email to joel@valueofsimple.com with your suggestion. I am also taking requests for what you want to see from my upcoming fall 2014 Simplicity event called Simple Rev. I've been spending a ton of time in the past month deciding on the dates for this shindig, lining up a venue, hunting for great workshop leaders, getting inspired by the official Simple Rev Brain Trust, which I'll talk about in future episodes, and just being super stoked by all the feedback from the equally important unofficial Brain Trust, which is you and everyone else who listens to the show. I will keep you updated as the future group of 200-plus simplicity lovers and doers gets closer to gathering in Minneapolis, Minnesota next year. Now, in the near term, I will be hitting the road soon with my honey and my two boys to visit my in-laws around Madison, Wisconsin. Melinda and I, we always head there, that is Madison, around Christmas time so that we can see some college friends and spend some quality time with our two nephews and niece so I can test my paleo willpower when plates of delicious sugary junk are placed in front of me. Man, that's tough, but awfully rewarding to resist. But until then, my routines should be returning back to the days before my second son, Clark, who's almost 3 months old now, when he was born in mid-September, except for, of course, the super crappy sleeping part. That hasn't changed yet. I'm hoping it will soon. Melinda went back to work last week after almost 3 months of maternity leave, and I gotta tell you, I miss her presence in the house. I just miss having Clark around, too, to snuggle with during work breaks. Don't worry, though. I still have my two dogs here during the day to keep me company and potentially disrupt my podcast episodes since Melinda and Clark can't do it now. Isn't that right, Lucia and Emsky? They'd bark if they got the cue. Okay, let's turn to the heart of the show and my guest for this one. Her name is Laura Whitman of OrgJunkie.com, and you will hear a full intro in a moment. What I'm most excited about is Laura's wisdom on how to cut organizing frustration and annoyances seriously down to size, like a teeny tiny, you can't even see them anymore size. She also hopes to help people that were not born with the organizing gene, and she even has some methods of getting kids to come up with creative organizing solutions by themselves. I know, right? By themselves? I took notes, and maybe you'll want to as well, because some of this stuff is going to come in handy when Grant and Clark are just a little bit older. Maybe it's perfect for your kids right now, or maybe even your older kids who are growing up and out of the house. We can all use a little help, right? So whether you feel like you need to enter clutter rehab, or you love drooling over storage bins, this episode is going to have something for you. You ready to get it cranked up? Here we go. I'm just going to come right out and say it. My guest today is a freak, but not just any kind of freak, an organizing freak, which, by the way, may be healthier than being a spreadsheet fanatic like I am. The freak label is one happily self-applied by a woman that was one of the first to really challenge my assumptions when I went through my personal renaissance about 4 years ago. Her name is Laura Whitman, and she's best known for her website, OrgJunkie.com. Laura has been helping people for years and years do two of the three things we talk about on Smart and Simple Matters all the time: simplify and organize. But do not underestimate her ability to help you be money-wise as well, or create some seriously rockin' time management practices. Laura lives in Alberta, Canada, with her three kiddos, ranging from a teenage daughter to a preteen son, and just seems to have this vibrancy about her that people gravitate to. And she's also the author of a popular book called Clutter Rehab, has an aptly named app in the iTunes store called Org Junkie, and can be found all over the web on various social media channels. So I want to say welcome to the show, Laura. It's majorly groovy to have you as a guest today.
Why, thank you, Joel. That was very nice.
Well, good. That's always the intention, and to make people understand that you bring a lot to the table, which they will be hearing about shortly. But I want to issue a disclaimer real quick. Normally, we start every show with what I call the seeds of awesomeness. We're going to skip that today to change it up a little bit, do a little experiment, and we're just going to dive into the hearty good stuff. Does that sound good to you, Laura?
Sounds good.
All right. So, first thing that people might notice if they go to orgjunkie.com, in the sidebar on the right of the homepage, you have a note with your picture on it that says, "Hi, I'm Laura, and I'm addicted to organizing and the simplicity it offers." Now, that leads me to believe that you don't organize because somebody says that you should organize. You organize because society expects you to have your house in a certain way. No, that I don't get that vibe at all either.
Nope.
It seems like you organize with a purpose, and that purpose is simplicity. So is that the primary goal of why you organize?
Absolutely. There's just so much organizing offers that makes my life so much easier that as I learned these things, I quickly became addicted to it because it freed up so much time. It saved me so much money, and the biggest one for me is just less frustrations, because I hate being annoyed. So little things, like if I opened up a cupboard and something fell out onto me, was a red flag to me. I started to learn that I didn't have to feel this frustration when something came out every time, and instead of just putting it back, closing the door, going away, and then coming back only to do it all over again every time. That's frustrating. That just builds a negativity into your life that is just not even necessary. And when I learned that there were things I could do about that I didn't have to keep experiencing these things over and over again, it really opened my eyes. And as I became more and more addicted to this process, I just couldn't get enough. And I just wanted to purge more things out of my life, so I didn't have, you know, things falling out on me when I opened up cupboards, or, you know, if I couldn't find something. And I see this all the time, people looking for things, and it used to happen to me, where if you couldn't find something and yet it was a pattern, then there was something you could do about it. Like, and you could have a spot for your keys, and you could have a spot for your purse or your wallet, and not have to think about it anymore.
But what was the catalyst? Were there a series of catalysts that got you addicted to organizing? Or was it just the cumulative effect of opening all those cupboards one too many times and feeling that frustration building and building?
No, I definitely had an aha moment. And, I get so excited about talking about it because it just really opened my eyes. It was a number of years ago when my second child, I was pregnant with my second child, and living in a 900 square foot house, no basement or anything, just a bungalow. And I needed to find, I wanted to make a nursery. It was a three bedroom house, but I had my daughter in one and an office in the other. And I wanted to make the office into his nursery. And then I realized, well, where am I going to put my desk? Where am I going to put my computer that needed to come out of that room? Every room seemed full. And, you know, at that time you had the big monitors and, you know, it took up a lot of space. Mm-hmm. I was looking around and we had this coat closet in our dining room, of all things. I don't know why it was in the dining room, but, and it was, and just prior to that, we had just built an addition, just a small, tiny addition, sounds massive, but it was just a tiny little mud room that we'd put on and added another, added a coat closet to that. So I didn't need this coat closet in the dining room to be a coat closet anymore. So I was looking at that and I thought, could I put a desk in the closet? Like at that time, it just wasn't, you just didn't hear about that too much. I mean, now it's, you know, I did a whole post the other day about offices in a closet and it's really quite popular. But at that time, it just, I just felt like I was breaking all the rules by thinking I could put a desk in a closet. But wouldn't you know it, my desk fit in the closet. So I didn't build anything in the closet. I simply took the desk I had and put it in the closet. And it's not a big closet, it's just your standard everyday closet. Mm-hmm. And the door still shut. You know, my kids couldn't then touch everything in there. I could close it off. And we did put some shelves in the side. And I started like, you know, really having to, it was like a puzzle trying to get everything to fit in there. Like an entire room basically went into this closet. And so when I did it, when I got it to work, I was just beside myself with happiness. I can't believe that I could do this. And it was just a matter of like, yes, I had to purge some stuff, but also, you know, putting the puzzle pieces together to make it, you know, all just fit perfectly. And after that, I was just, wow, there's something to be said for not needing as much space, but making good use of the space you already own. Yeah. And so that was how it kind of started for me. And then no space was off limits after that.
Whether it had grubby kid hands on it or not. I understand the benefits of just cordoning off a space for you. And again, you mentioned being able to have your office in a closet, basically, and have your desk in a closet. There's a lot of simplicity in that too. But as you got addicted to organizing and you started Org Junkie and you realized, oh my goodness, there are other people out here like me. I would imagine you've heard a lot of other people's origin stories about how they too got addicted to organizing. Can you tell us, maybe you have one or two super organizers in your community? How did they get hooked?
I actually don't know too many other people in my community that are as freakish about organizing as I am. But I will have to say this, that there are now, because my energy and my excitement about organizing does tend to be catchy. So I think I've created many junkies along the way, not just online, but also in my communities as well. So that's fun. I think what happens is people think if they weren't born with the organizing gene, that there's no hope for them at all. And so why even try? So I think it's encouraging to people to hear my story and hear how I wasn't always organized. My mom actually has a video. I wish I could find it to this day. She's panning around my teenage bedroom and literally I had a long dresser and it was piled with stuff. There was no organization to that at all. It was just piled with stuff. And it was, I remember seeing it going, oh, right.
Well, let me ask you.
Come a long way.
As a teenager, I remember, and I should be embarrassed to admit it. I'm not going to be embarrassed to admit it. I kept my stuffed animals in my childhood bedroom until I went off to college, until I was 18. And I had this giant pile on a dresser of my stuffed animals. Just no categorization, no nothing, just throw it on top of them. And that's kind of silly. But teenagers, you'd like to think of them as inherently disorganized and just all over the place. You've got a couple in your house, though. Have they caught the organizing bug as well?
Well, let's see. No.
Why not?
But here is what I like to teach, and it has proven itself with my kids. They don't necessarily have organizing tendencies. It's not something they do for fun, but I do set up situations where they need to come up with solutions in order to keep their things. For instance, one of my rules is the floor is not a shelf, is what I always say. And so I will say to them, like, for instance, I'm thinking of a situation with my daughter where she had all these handbags and bags, and they were all piled on the floor. And I said, listen, this floor is not a shelf, but if you want to keep all those bags, You have to come up with a solution. So I could have jumped in there and done it for her, but that wouldn't have given her the opportunity to kind of think that through. And maybe she didn't really even care about keeping those bags, and that would have been apparent if she didn't come up with an alternative solution. If she wasn't interested in coming up with an alternative solution, she didn't want those bags, and that was her choice to make. But she did come up with an alternative solution all on her own, and I just thought it was genius, if I do say so myself. She had taken a skirt rack. So it was a three or four tiered skirt rack with the clips. So it's a hanger. And she just clipped, I think she had an empty one in her closet, and she just clipped all her bags to it and hung it in her closet. And I walked in, I thought, wow, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. It's off the floor. It's hanging up. That's great, you know? And she kind of had to go through that process herself. Okay, what can I do here? Is it a matter of I have shelf space? Do I want to get rid of something over there to make room for this? And then in order to do that, she would have had to prioritize what was more important. So I wasn't setting her up for failure there. I was empowering her to make those decisions. What's most important here? What, you know, in terms of priorities, because I think that's something that's hard for people, is prioritizing what is most important, because they'll say everything is important. But if we don't have that kind of space in our homes, everything can't be equally important. You will have to make some tough decisions. So in that situation, I do kind of push my kids a little bit to make those decisions. I never, ever throw anything of theirs away without their permission. I always have gone in and worked with them and forced them to make the decision. I don't want to be the bad guy, but that's not why I do it. I do it so that they're learning skills that will last them a lifetime. And
sounds like what you're doing is descriptive instead of prescriptive. Like, do it this way. You just simply say, there's an end state that I want you to achieve,
right?
And then figure it out. Because if you don't, there's going to be some issues that we're going to have to deal with otherwise. Well, if the organizing freak, that's you, by the way, and I love the fact that you refer to yourself that way. Like, I call myself a spreadsheet fanatic all the time.
Oh, wow.
I explain myself as a crazy. And that's kind of hard language for a lot of people. But sometimes it seems kind of appropriate. Like, you're just so wrapped up in something that the label applies, especially when it's self-applied. But if you can't necessarily get somebody in your own household hooked on organizing, how do you, besides the descriptive way for your children, do you have one or two specific examples that you use in your household outside of the one that you already gave where outcome has been achieved that really worked well?
Let me see, specific example. I'm thinking off the top of my head, I'm just thinking the fact that I'm leading by example as well. So my kids do see that. And so I obviously don't use my floor as a shelf, for instance. I can't expect them to do something if I'm also not following my own rules that I have. Yeah, so I wouldn't say they were crazy passionate about organizing, but they definitely know how, have the skills to be organized, and that's really all I can ask for. So,
do they follow the process?
They do.
P-R-O-C-E-S-S, acronym for the foundation of how you view your environment. Maybe, can you tell us, what is process? What does that acronym stand for?
Yeah, it's just something I came up with as a simple way to sort of, I was using the process long before I had the acronym. So I just kind of wanted to tie it all in just to make it easy for me to teach others. And so the P of process stands for plan. And it's just it's a matter of, and I'll go back to my daughter's situation. You know, she had to think that one through and plan and prioritize and kind of get her mind wrapped around how this was going to look. Or if you have a closet, for instance, and you know that you have certain things you want to put in that closet. Okay, well, let's plan it out.
How do you do that, though? How do you take a step back? Because that seems like a foundational step of anything. You know, if you just rush into it right away and you start removing things and organizing things haphazardly, the best outcomes aren't going to be achieved. So how do you personally, if you like, how does somebody like you take a step back and think, okay, let me really go through this and know all the various options before I start doing?
Well, one of the best ways to do that is to know what needs to go into a space. So what does that space have to house? And then if you're already using the space, asking yourself some simple questions about what is already working in the space and what isn't working. Because once I think you can answer those, you can make the necessary changes. What annoys me about this space? Because I think let's eliminate that. I am constantly thinking in my head about how I can eliminate a frustration in my life. I like to, and I think when I live a very simple life, to me that, because it does mean something different to everybody else, but to me it means I'm not living in a state of negativity or frustration. So that's when I look at a space, I'm asking myself those questions, and you don't necessarily have to solve them at that point. It's just planning what it's going to look like. And sometimes we just have to, know what's working, what's not working. And those usually will drill it down for you.
Some of the other steps in the process, they seem pretty straightforward. Like the next one, the R stands for remove items.
And this one, people give me the most grief about.
Do they really? Why?
Because it sounds like an awful lot of work. And I agree, it does. If you, if you're looking at your linen closet, and most people have packed, jammed linen closets, and to think about taking it all out, piling it all up on the floor, it's scary. I totally get that. It is scary. But what I think people learn from, going through that step is that once it's all out and you evaluate it outside of the space, sorting like with like and whatnot, you realize that, oh, I have 6 sets of sheets for our bed, and at that point you have to really, do I need 6 sets of sheets? Whereas when you're trying to organize it by the method of the organized shuffle method, which is what I call it, if you don't take everything out, you kind of miss that sometimes. And so I do, take it all out. It will look worse before it gets better, but I promise you it actually goes faster that way than if you try to organize within a space. Now, obviously if you're doing a whole room, that's harder because you can't move your furniture out, but, you could, leave the bigger pieces, but take out, everything else. Yeah.
So that's where the O comes in process, organize into piles. This is a very visual thing that you have there. When you have things literally stacked up in front of you and you can see categories and subcategories of things or how something might relate to something else, that seems like a pretty key step when in your physical environment, when you're trying to process everything.
Absolutely. And it's just collecting it all. And, people are always surprised when they're, if they're like, for instance, if you're organizing an office and you end up with 6-7 boxes of envelopes. Oh, I didn't know I had that many envelopes. But typically that's what happens in a space, because if you can't find something, often people just go buy another. Like if you can't find your envelopes, you'll just go buy another box of envelopes, and then they'll store that somewhere else. And eventually they're kind of all scattered around. So when you are removing everything and compiling it, that's when it kind of dawns on you. Oh, I do have quite a few envelopes or whatever it is. And, and it visually, it has huge impact.
That's a really good point in terms of having the same thing in so many different places, or even not even within your same house. You might have the same thing at work. You might have the same thing at grandma's house. You might have the same thing in a whole bunch of different places. Do you really need to have a source of envelopes every single place you go? Probably not.
Right.
Walking through the rest of it, I like this process that you have here. The C is containerize, and then the E, evaluate plan. The S is simplify any remaining issues. And the last one, which I love, is smile. Smile and feel good about everything that you've just done. That's a good way to finish off process.
I love to smile. And I think what people don't give themselves credit for is they don't stop when they finish a project. They don't stop and soak it in. Because I think that it's key, because I think you have to, and this is where I suggest, even in the planning part, to take before pictures, because when you're going through the process and get to the end result, you don't realize how far you've come. And until you go back and look at those before pictures and go, wow, I've really accomplished a lot here. And it's taking a moment to appreciate what you've done, all the hard work you've put in, and using that to motivate you to want to continue to tackle other areas of your home. And it is really quite motivating.
Can you use this, because this seems perfect for kitchen utensils or a sock drawer or a shoe closet, all things that I'm totally not qualified to help somebody with. But can you use this for non-physical items, whether it's your digital landscape on your mobile devices, even your brain? Can you organize things within your brain with the process?
Oh, I don't see why not. And especially, yeah, digital too. I mean, photos, for instance, on our computers, because they just pile up and we don't tend to do anything with them anymore. Like they sit on our computers and then going through the process can be applied to anything.
That the photos part, I know that's really popular. Actually, there's a podcast that I listen to, Smart. It's called Simple Life Together, Dan and Vanessa Hayes. They're going to have to forgive me for butchering that one. They're good friends. So Simple Life Together, they recently had a professional photography organizer on. I'm going to link to it in the show notes because it was a great episode about organizing your photos. And yeah, you can give it a listen too if you like. Mm-hmm. But as far as you go, I've never talked about this before, but I know that this is definitely on people's minds. How do you organize all your digital photos?
I keep it pretty simple, as I do most things, because I think often we tend to overcomplicate things and put too many steps in. And then as soon as there's too many steps, we don't want to do them. So for me, I just have my pictures download by year and by day. I could put the month step in there, but I found as I was looking for pictures, I didn't necessarily have to go to the month. And then I back up regularly to an external hard drive and as well to DVD and by year also. So
you don't have any kind of software where you tag things with keyword-rich terms, or you try to organize them by topic or by place or by the people who are in there? No, you just, okay.
But I will tell you this, if I found myself being frustrated trying to find something, because again, I'm always paying attention to those things that frustrate me. If I found I was totally being frustrated, and that's a key that whatever system you're using is not working. And then I would have to evaluate and maybe reassess and try something new. But so far, that system hasn't sparked any of those kind of negative feelings. So I leave it alone and continue on with it. So, yeah.
It sounds like you're going back to the theme of you organize out of necessity, not because somebody wants you to, or not because you feel like you should. Have you ever wanted to become such a good minimalist, though, that there wouldn't be much left to organize?
Well, I have thought about that, and I wouldn't call myself a minimalist. I mean, I still have a home full of things, but I think you have to, for instance.
Well, it sounds like, you don't even think in terms of minimalism. I know that some people have negative connotations with that, and I totally get it. The barren landscape, and I practice and I consider myself a minimalist, and I think of it as a pretty positive thing. But when I hear your story about moving from a 3,000 square foot house, I think you did that back in 2010, to something half of the size. I know you didn't think like I would have, sweet, I'm rocking the minimalist landscape, baby. But you moved to a house half the size. How did that make you feel, being able to get all your stuff and being able to have a simple life in a house that was half the size?
Oh, I didn't know how I was going to feel, actually, when I, to be perfectly honest, I was nervous. I purged so much before I left. I look at it as sort of, I organize for the space I have. So when I got to this house, I realized, okay, I can only keep what I have the room to store. And, I'm not going to go out and buy a storage unit, something I totally don't believe in, unless it's for a very, very temporary situation. But so for me, I knew that, okay, there's a problem here. I have more stuff than I have home. what's gonna go? And I literally had to look at it like that. So it wasn't that I was paring down just to pare down. It was out of necessity, like you said, and I had to make it fit, right? So I like to say purge until it fits. So that's what I did. And so when I moved here again, I had piles of stuff after moving, not in addition to the piles that stayed behind. It's a process. Like it takes some time. Anytime you move, it takes some time to find the flow of the home and everything. But I did have to purge all over again and just until it fits. So I also don't love clutter because of the time it takes away from my life. So for instance, I don't have a lot of knickknacks in things in my home because I would have to dust those things, and dusting to me takes time. So I'm a minimalist in that way. And then being intentional about what I keep. So I'm not just keeping it to fill my home, but the stuff that's left in my home is stuff I really love and use. I'm not just filling it for the sake of filling it. Right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of cost with acquiring something. There's the initial cost, maybe financial, and also mm-hmm. the time that it took to go and research it and buy it. But then there's the maintenance cost, which a lot of people don't even factor in when they're buying things. And I'm not just talking about physical things, but anything that you own, you probably need to maintain or eventually dispose of at some point in time if it doesn't last forever. And again, that's one of the reasons why I love minimalism, is because it gives me the lens in which to view the world, to acquire less and to want less and to need less and be happy the less that I have. And it also makes maintenance super easy. I don't dust very frequently either. And yeah, I'm like you. I don't really dust very much. But that you were talking about purge until it fits. Now, I haven't read your book. I'll admit it's called Clutter Rehab, but I would imagine purge until it fits is one of the themes in your book. Is that true?
Yes, I believe it's in there. or maybe that's something I've said since. Like, I can't remember exactly myself either, but I see that come up on the blog a lot, where people say are searching desperately for storage solutions for their stuff, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but totally bypassing the whole idea that you don't have to keep everything. I like to call clutter postponed decisions. And people really don't want to make decisions about their stuff. I set these sort of rules up for myself, like the one in, one out rule. So to help me make those decisions, for instance, in my closet, I have a set number of hangers. I couldn't tell you how many hangers, but when I bring something else in, it's triggered for me that I have to get rid of something else because I would have no hanger to hang that thing up on. So it's sort of setting myself up for success every time. So I bring this thing in, I don't have a hanger to hang it up. I mean, I could go purchase another hanger, but I've already got that rule in place in my mind. No, something else has to go so I can have the hanger to hang it in my closet. So it's kind of these little things I use to make the decision-making process easier. So rather than postponing the decisions any longer, how can I facilitate this process so it's a little bit easier on me? And it does. Those decision-making habits that we need to get into will get easier over time, especially when you let some things go and realize, all the fears that you have associated with getting rid of something don't necessarily surface. And yet, even if they do, oh, okay, it's not the end of the world. So, realizing that.
How far can a principle like one in, one out go? Does it work for intangible things like relationships, for example? If you were to add a new friend to your life, and again, this seems kind of strange, but I'm curious about how far certain principles can be applied beyond our physical environment. Do you use the one in, one out principle for other things? Relationships may be a bad example.
I don't think so. I don't look at my friends in that way, no. But I am very guarded with my time. So I would think that the more friends you have in your life, the more time that would require. So that is something that one would have to consider for sure. I choose to it's my choice to have fewer friends, but really good friends. So I don't, maybe I've just never thought about it that way in terms of just what it requires in terms of time and attention as well. So
it's probably just the big time extrovert in me that, because I love connecting with new people. And this is one of the challenges that I have, is because I'm an extrovert and because I love getting out there, if you will, and connecting with new people and cultivating new relationships and forming new friendships, it becomes an organizational challenge in your contacts. How do you categorize and subcategorize people and keep track of all that information, which I've figured out a way to do it. And sometimes I have to realize that I'm certainly not the norm when it comes to relationships and how to organize them. So
I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
Through and through. So I don't tend to have that problem.
Yeah, it's well, we won't get into the differences between introverts and extroverts. I actually think it's slightly overplayed as far as how popular it is to talk about on blog posts and in conversations with friends. But that is another topic for another day. It seems like you do, you said that you value just a few things, whether that's really deep relationships or really meaningful items in your house. Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like you just don't want to have anything, like that you have enough and that all you really need more of is just nothing?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, there's just some days where it's like I have to just stop and, you know, so much of the acquiring of stuff, and I like to shop just as much as the next person. There just comes a point where it's just like, why do we bring all this stuff in? And just evaluating on basis on, is it even something we need? Are we trying to fill something else, or procrastinate on something else? Because that often is the case too, where we'll use shopping as a distraction or procrastination from something else. So, yeah.
Well, cool. I think you just brought a full circle there in terms of why. Why is it that organization is meaningful to you? How can you make it fun? What does it enable you to do? Having simplicity in your case and not feeling frustration or negativity, I mean, that's a great reason for it as well. I do it because it helps me with my leaky brain. Like when I organize my digital environment, if I don't do it in a specific way, then heaven help everybody, because I'm just going to forget everything that happens to me. I do like to have a little bit of fun towards the end of the show, though. And I was curious to ask you, and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is, how many people actually call you an organizing freak to your face?
A lot.
Anybody? Yes?
Of course, all the time. Just because, you know, I can't be out somewhere, you know, if I'm shopping or whatever, and see a row of beautifully colored baskets and bins. I can't stop but drool. Like, it's just in me. I have to touch, and I have to, you know, I have to, like, you know, just get up there and I can't just walk past. So I think that's where the crazy comes into. And, or if I'm at the dollar store and the rows and rows of bins and things like that, it gets me excited. And
you bust out the drool cloth and dab the saliva coming off of your lip.
Yeah. Right? It's a little pathetic. I will say that, but I'm very good. I don't, because back to the process, people are very confused about the C being in the middle, because I don't know if you know this, but
containerize, right?
Yeah, the containerize, because people want to do that first. They think the answer to all their problems is just to go buy more bins and stuff their clutter into the bins. But truthfully, you can't organize clutter. So you have to, that's not the answer. You just can't buy bins and stick your stuff in there and hope it works. But that's why it's in the middle after you've kind of done your purge, and then you're only containerizing what's left that you love and use. So for me, I am, you know, as much as I love the baskets and bins and go crazy for them, I am very careful about bringing more in, unless I have a purpose already in mind. But it's not always easy.
No, it's certainly not. It certainly isn't. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. And I guess I just have one more question for you here before we wrap it up. Is there anything that we did not talk about that you would like people to know?
I just want people to know, though, that if they feel like they're not or if they call themselves an unorganized person and their life is in clutter and chaos, that it could just mean they haven't learned the skills yet. So it's not that they're a failure in any stretch of the imagination. It just might mean they haven't learned the skills. And once you learn the skills and exercise those skills and practice them on a regular basis, they'll get it. They'll get the hang of it. And maybe get addicted to it as much as I am.
Yeah. And I'm sure they could pick up some of those skills on orgjunkie.com. Where else could people pick up some skills or perhaps find you online?
My social media channels. I love Instagram. I had just recently came back from a trip to Toronto, and I posted pictures of all the bins and baskets I was drooling on while I was there. So stuff like that. People get to see a little of the crazy come out, but I think they enjoy seeing some of the organizing candy as well. So, and I'm Org Junkie on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Everywhere I'm just Org Junkie. It's sort of my crazy persona.
Gotcha. So whether you feel like you are genetically bred to be disorganized or you are destined to remain disorganized, people should probably head over and check you out somewhere online to maybe feel a little bit more control, a little bit more focus in life. I like that, Laura. Thanks a ton for being my guest on the show today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much.
Well, hey again. What did you think of Laura and her insight? Me? You probably didn't ask me just now. I'm going to tell you anyway. I really enjoyed her stories and solutions, among other things, of course. And I got to tell you, I just really like it when people offer a framework, like this process framework that Laura has, the kind that's very descriptive and not prescriptive, because I don't do well with the whole ye shall do this or suffer paradigm. I know some people want that, but that just ain't my bag, baby. If you do like what Laura had to say, let her know that you appreciated it by finding the Org Junkie handle on Twitter or Instagram or visiting her home base at orgjunkie.com. And make sure to check out the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM037 for links to the stuff that we spoke about and the resources that may float your boat. One of those links goes to the awesome episode that my friends Dan and Vanessa Hayes at Simple Life Together recorded with Kathy Nelson, who is the founder and president of the Association of Personal Photo Organizers. It is wicked, super duper sweet. That is a high, high level of sweetness. And when it comes to managing your existing and future digital and physical photos, I'd get on that if I were you. But if you're feeling like you need some non-photo related systems to help you get a handle on a facet of your life, maybe you want to sign up for an unsexy system session. Discover more about them and how they can help you rock the unsexy side of life at valueofsimple.com/USS. But sometimes you need a little more sexy though. And if you don't want to let yet another year go by without getting your investing act together, have a look at my Start Investing with $100 course. You can find it at valueofsimple.com/SIW100. And by the way, I'm also evaluating my public speaking opportunities for 2014. So if you would like me to speak with you, to you, or for you, head on over to valueofsimple.com/speaking to find out how to book me for your action. You may want to hop to it because my availability is going to get a bit tighter after experience curating the book is published soon. And you know what else you could do for me though? I'm sorry, I'm giving a laundry list here. I should really just stick to one or two things. I'm having trouble doing it. Bear with me. If what you could do for me though, if you don't want an unsexy system session, if you don't need me to speak with you or to you, if you aren't interested in Start Investing with $100, if you aren't interested in curating your existence, maybe you're thinking that Joel's going to ask to leave an iTunes review again, and I'd be grateful if you would, but that's not what I have in mind. Right now, like, this moment, if you're available and you're in front of a device that has email on it, I'd just like you to take literally 1 minute and send an email to joel@valueofsimple.com just saying, hey, all I want is for you to include your first name and last name, and one detail about you that you would like me to know. And if you dig, I may even read a few notes off at the top of a future show, if that's okay with you. Seriously, though, I really want and need to hear from you, so I know who's listening and where you are coming from. That's the way that I improve. That's the way that I create content that you really dig, that I bring the right guests on the show, or when I go solo, I'm covering the topics that you want to know about. Okay, thank you again for honoring me with your precious attention. Really, it's a gift, and I appreciate it. You can find the show notes at valuesimple.com/SASM037. There is always good stuff in the show notes, you know. I hope you're taking it easy. As we say in Minnesota, take her easy. And keeping it simple. It's now time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You have just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zaslavsky, creator of all things Value of Simple.